You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
call may be recorded or transcribed. With your night, running like a red disease. Running like a red disease. Ghetto people. Stop giving up yourself. Stop doing what you're doing to yourself. You got to learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and in honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We Ashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. we don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Baba Oshi. Hotel family, hope everything is well with you today. Hope you're going to have a good day today, and especially in light of after last night. That's what me and my good friend, brother Muhammad Abdullah, will be talking about. So, yeah, that's... So this is African Perspective. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. Top of the page, you'll see podcast programs. Click on that. The drop down, there'll be first one up, African Perspectives. Click on that, and there'll be programs that are dated and titled. Like this one will be on there, that's for sure. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening, once again, this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern, and all times are going to give our Eastern times. Tomorrow, on Thursday, from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., Mississippi on the Move, the Black Liberation Movement with Brother Patrick Lumumba of the Geronimo Pratt Gun Club. Friday from 8 p.m. until Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Saturday from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., the Sankofa Elders Council with Dr. Janine. Sunday at 7 p.m., once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're going to go right to the Inya Sasim, and then right to my brother, and we're going to have some good discussions, and I hope you join us. Yeah. Once again, I give you the call-in number, which is 215-490-9832, and you can be a part of the conversation. The Inya Sasim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. November 5th. Fear is, in fact, this one here, man, this is on point. So... yeah, this is on point here. This one, a lot of times, that's interesting because when I read the Inya Sasim at the beginning of each program, you know, or some of the days that I miss, but particularly that day's program and the discussion of what that day program is about, the Inya Sasim is on point. You'll see, fear is worse than the blow, African proverb. There are so many individuals who question the need for direct, empowering action because they have not yet grasped the magnitude of the threat against African sanity and existence. They are not spurred to act in an intelligent, productive fashion for any number of reasons. It could be because they seriously misjudge the intent, intensity, and longevity of the assault against African spirits, minds, bodies, and spaces. It could be because they live in fear of losing their petty, dependent privilege, influence, and compensatory consumption patterns. Or it could be because they are in chronic denial of both their insecurities and fears. They either refuse to accept or do not yet realize that we are still at war. Even if they do happen to glance in that direction, they quickly turn away for fear of the blow. Urugu, the European, the Caucasian, Urugu, on the other hand, fully realizing that they are at war against the world and thrive on their fears and ours. Their fear does not paralyze them. It paralyzes us. And again, not only does it not paralyze them, it galvanizes them. The election, it galvanizes them against any and everything outside of their individual selves in an effort to remove the sources of their fears. When we panic in reaction to their reaction, their reactive fears, we lose because before we begin. And making the enemy panic before they even step into the front line is a strategy of war they have used so effectively against us. Of equal importance, panic is not conducive to longevity. And if we are to win, warriors must last. If you are to destroy evil, you must survive it to fight it. Ashe. Firm, I do not fear what may come. The thought of painful consequences do not deter me from acting righteously. Affirm, I do not fear what may come. The thought of painful consequences do not deter me from acting righteously. November 6th. Sometimes the obvious blinds us. Hunter Haviland Adams III. In much the same way as our minds will shut down our consciousness, we are experiencing too much physical and emotional pain. And when our senses are overloaded by the magnitude and assault against African people anywhere and everywhere, most will don the kind of social blinders which will make our general destruction seem passe and racially impersonal. These blinders allow them to see this destruction level against specific someones who just happen to look like us. The duration, the heinousness, and grand variety of the genocidal assault against us often becomes too much to psychologically bear. The obviously becomes too obvious, and from time to time, unfathomable, surreal. It is terrorism at its best. For us, terrorism is not only defined as the creation of fear through a murderous assault that can come from anywhere and by any means at any time, but also, equally important, as an endless one. And just one aspect of it, that of being physically murdered by the public and private contracted and fear agents of the state in such consistently incredible numbers, day in and day out on the streets, in our homes, and in our penal and medical institutions. It's too much for us, for most of us, to think, to comprehend well. For many escapists, so much murder, so much unrelenting murder, blinds us to the fact that we are being murdered. They are no longer able to see the conscious intent of Ma'afa because they have lost too much of their mind in Urugu to see them as evil. For intents and purposes, they have become so desanitized to their own murder that they're incapable of seeing that the elephant destroying the room is white, is Caucasian. Is Urugu. Affirm, I can see what stands logically before my eyes. Affirm, I can see what stands logically before my eyes. Brothers and sisters, the Inya Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Good morning, family, and I hope you're well. I hope you slept well. Brother Muhammad Abdullah, how you doing?
Can you hear me, Ocean?
I can hear you loud and clear, dear brother.
So how am I doing?
Yeah.
Well, I went to bed, around 10 o'clock, I turned all the media off, and I spent the rest of the evening until I went to sleep watching some of the best reported African-American history to me. I watched the history of jazz.
Ah, is that Kim Burns? Kim Burns? Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And, so I would like to quote somebody, you know, with Marcellus, Malcolm, Prophet Muhammad, W.B. Du Bois. I could think a lot of people to quote.
King Oliver?
King Oliver. but I, when I woke up this, you know, they were saying, you know, when we came up in the 50s, 60s, 70s, somewhere along in there, might even been put the song, everybody loves a winner.
Yeah.
Not this morning.
I swear.
I don't love that guy.
Not at all.
I feel like John F. Kennedy after the Bay of Pigs when he said, "Victory has 1,000 fathers, defeat is an orphan."
I say, yeah.
So, you know, but yeah. The thing of it is, I am no more broke.
Right, then you would have been if she was there.
I would have been if Vice President Kamala Debbie Harris had won. It's just, I think one of the things we can teach our young people, you know, when you, you know, Allah says in the Quran to all of us, strive hard as in a race. But you know for surety, sometimes you race and you don't win. So we have to learn, and we know loss. I don't feel really any different than I did the morning that I woke up and George W. Bush was president.
Yeah.
We have very, very, you know, short memory span. I think the New York Times said it recently in an op-ed. Some of us suffer from collective amnesia. Mm-hmm. We forget real fast.
Yeah.
I was trying to remind people before yesterday, are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? And I looked into 4 years ago, and 4 years ago, who was president of the United States? Donald John Trump.
Yeah.
And what was going on 4 years ago in 2020?
Yeah.
In April of 2020, I was working at the public library in downtown Madison, Wisconsin, and driving taxi cab. The on a Saturday, the library shut down.
Everything
didn't open up. It didn't open back up until November, I think.
Mm-hmm.
May have been late, but somewhere around that time. And even when it opened back up, you couldn't check out a book, a CD, a DVD. You couldn't look at a newspaper. You could only come in for an hour, get on the computer. And when you got up, we had to sanitize the chair, the desk, the keyboard, the monitor, the CPU. And then you had to leave.
All of that after each use.
After what?
I said all of that after each use.
After each use. Mm-hmm. Yeah, after each use. And then I looked at how many people were sick and dying this time 4 years ago.
Yeah.
All those people who voted for this guy to be president again, they forgot about that.
Mm-hmm.
But again, we've come through some stuff. I wish our young people. I was born in Jim Crow in Sanford, Florida, in 1950. I lived in Caruthersville, Missouri, for a couple of years before we came to Milwaukee. But I did not see Jim Crow out of my own eyes. I didn't know what was going on around me.
Mm-hmm.
Young people today. We try to convince them about slavery. We can't convince them about Jim Crow because they didn't live. They didn't see it. They didn't grow up with it. Our parents, when we came up here, they were like, I don't want to talk about that. That's behind me. I want to move. But look at some of our, you know, and we've done some tremendous things as a people. People that come over here as immigrants, as an imam, in the Muslim community in Milwaukee and traveling around the country, I know a lot of immigrant Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them do not see us. I'm talking about African, Arab, Asian, European. They do not see us. They come here, they see all this opportunity. They're like, what's wrong with y'all?
Mm.
Well, wait a while. Mm-hmm. Wait till you know, some of them are seeing it now. Oshie, there are Muslim communities, immigrant Muslim communities, where not in the African-American community that I know across the country, but there are some immigrant Muslim communities where LGBTQ people have their rights. Somebody told me, I have not seen it, that there's an LGBTQ person teaching Muslim children in a school. Now, we live in America, but you know, there's a separation between church and state.
Sure.
So in my religious community, I should be able to establish whatever the norm is for us, and I know nothing that normalizes homosexuality in the Muslim experience, in the Muslim faith. People ask me, or I ask people sometimes, can you be a Muslim? Can you be a follower of the Quran and Prophet Muhammad and his sunnah and be homosexual? Certainly. You just can't practice homosexuality, just like you can't practice fornication and adultery in Islam. No imam, no Muslim worth their salt is going to say, we live in America and you have the freedom to do. You do not have freedom to fornicate, to commit adultery in Islam. I don't care what country you live in. But I recognize we live in a society where people have their rights. But I can tell you this. If you are of that whatever alphabet you are in this country today, as they say, there's a saying, the roots in the song, the soundtrack to the movie The Best Man. They're talking about this brother who doesn't slept with his, the best man that slept with his best partner's wife. In the song, the brother said, yeah, you kind of nervous and you got a right to be. You nervous this morning about the outcome of the election, you got a right to be. If you're a man, you still got to stand up.
That's right.
If you're a woman, you still got to stand up.
And do whatever you have to do to continue on with your life, to do whatever you have
to do.
That's right.
Well, yeah. What was wrong yesterday is still wrong today, and this dude is a wrong dude.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's sitting in the seat now. So, you know, all I can say is we have to strap on and be ready to take the ride. And even if we won, Oshie, I wanted to ask the question. Okay, she won. Now, some of y'all had trepidation about voting for her.
Yeah.
But what would you ask her for? What would you organize around and get for your vote if she had won? You have the same question today, even though she didn't win. It still comes down to, what are you going to do in your community? The crime, the stuff we see that we shake our heads at in Milwaukee and Atlanta and Philadelphia and Oakland and Inglewood or wherever around the world we live, same stuff is here today. And the question is, what we used to say in the 60s and 70s, you either part of the solution
or you're part of the problem. Or you're part of the problem. That's it. Yes, sir. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, these questions are necessary for us to ask ourselves. What are we going to do? You know, we know we've had those years with his ass. And the things he said and the things he's done. And even though there are some individuals who said that, well, you know, I had it. No, you didn't. The economics of Trump, what was left by Barack. Trump destroyed. Yeah. See, the thing is, we don't understand this. Trump was terrible. He was terrible. And he's going to be terrible again.
Whatever he touched fails. And he's what incentive does he have to be different? He has more incentive. We have the Supreme Court of the United States, and I'm a flawed individual. You know, I'm a flawed individual. But throughout history, we know when it came to Plessy versus Ferguson and
Dred Scott,
the Scottsboro boy.
Yep.
Going across our history, post-slavery, we've had a Supreme Court that, you know, was more often the Supreme Court than the Supreme Court. We got them back. That's the people, you know, you have, we have there. They have the majority. You know, one thing I can say about these Republicans, if they are nothing else, they are strategic. They are very strategic. And when it comes to the guy who won the election yesterday, that guy, despite my Muslim beliefs, and I don't believe in luck, that is one of the luckiest SOPs that I have ever seen. I have never seen anybody with that much Teflon
yeah.
in the modern era.
Modern, right. Exactly. Yeah. I agree.
I mean, Ronald Reagan, all of these people, to quote St. Paul Mooney.
I love Paul Mooney.
You know, we just had some people in the office. We had some terrible people, man.
Yeah.
But this guy is a different kind of guy.
Yeah, he's the worst.
And he reminds me of a statement, and I quoted it, under the days up to the election, but in the last 90 days, you recalled Malcolm making this statement. Malcolm Ibn Earl and Louise Little's son, bright and shining star. Stop talking about the South. As long as you south of the Canadian border, you south.
You south.
The only difference between a southern individual like what we're dealing with is their war. You see their thing. Mm. The northern same individual is a fox. They're both canine. But the addendum to that statement by Malcolm is, the jar has been shaken up more so now. And those individuals, just like what you saw win yesterday, is the post Civil War Confederate diaspora. Mm. These people live all over the country now.
Mm-hmm.
They're not so divided. The Mason-Dixon line has been
right,
but I mean, you removed. Know.
Right. Oh, no doubt. It's all over. In fact, I often said, if you're south of the Canadian border, you're south. You know. But the reality is that they're fortified in the southeast. They're fortified in Mississippi, Louisiana, Georgia, Alabama, North, South Carolina, Kentucky. You know, they're fortified in Tennessee, you know, and they're very, very reactionary. And so, to me, it's obvious, and I sent you the exit polls and some statistics, but it's obvious that he was going to win the rural areas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is those urban areas and some suburbs that she needed to win concretely, and she didn't. I'm going to be honest with you. When I woke up and found out that he had won, and I know it was close when I was getting close to the Electoral College number when I fell asleep, you know. But then I heard, then I got up, heard that Wisconsin had pushed him over the top around about 3 o'clock in the morning, you know. And he won all of the battleground states. He won all of them.
You're from Milwaukee. This may not resonate with other people when I present this. So you're from Milwaukee. When you were growing up, what was the beer that made Milwaukee famous?
Slitz.
Who owned the Slitz Brewing Company? It doesn't exist in Milwaukee. We don't know where and what form it exists. It may be under another name in another state.
You still have Slitz. You can buy Slitz all over, and you know Coors Beer, the Coors family, they bought Slitz, you know. But
so who is the main owner of the Slitz Brewery Company?
what was the guy's name?
The E-Lines.
The E-Lines. Yeah.
The E-Lines.
And
most people, if you ask the smartest, if you ask my grandson, Abdulaziz Abdullah, Elamine's son, who are the E-Lines? I doubt if he knows.
Right.
The three largest donors to 45, 47 now was Elon Musk, the Yahudi from Vegas. Her husband died, but Adelman, the lady, mm-hmm. Yahoo lady Adelman,
mm-hmm.
and the senior person in the heir to the Elon family. This Yahoo Jewish man
mm-hmm.
was one of the three largest. I don't know if his money, he put more money than Elon Musk or Ms. Adelman, but he either is as rich or gave as much. And so sometimes it helps, you know, when Muhammad Ali went in the ring, they used to ask him, "Do you get nervous? Do you get butterflies?" He said, "If you don't, you're not human."
That's right, exactly.
But he knew who he was fighting. Sometimes mm-hmm. we fight and we really don't know who we fight.
Mm-hmm. But he knew. And he knew what to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. We have, and that's part of the adab. The Arabic word for character. That's the character of who we're dealing with, mm-hmm. is we're dealing with a character that oftentimes is invisible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if you know, what are we going to do next? Well, we could start. I don't think we will. I don't know who's listening to us this morning, Ocean. It's a gift from God. Whoever listened to us, because I know you serious about this discussion and so am I. But we can begin with our diet.
Mm-hmm.
If we change, you know, I look at some of our people and I could drop dead tomorrow. As we say, Allah knows best. Allah, you know, the will of Allah. But one thing for sure, when I look at our people, most of what plagues our people, African American, the indigenous American of African descent, is what we put in our mouth,
mm-hmm.
what we eat and what we drink. And if we could change that, we could start there. I'm not telling you to go to your neighborhood store and demand that your Palestinian Arab merchant stop selling chitlins. I'm not telling you to burn the store down. Just stop eating it.
Mm-hmm.
Stop eating food that you know. I'm telling you something, and I have one of my closest friends is a Muslim brother who is a doctor. He graduated. He has the same alma mater as Kamala Devi Harris. He graduated from Howard University, graduated from Harvard Medical School. As good of friends as we are, I can't say, you know, Doc, can you start telling all your patients to stop eating pork?
Mm-hmm.
He can't do that. That's not within the realm of science and medicine. That's really a faith-based position. And every time somebody laughs at me for being a fool for self-identifying as a Muslim the past 50 years. Sometimes I don't say anything. I just think to myself that I don't eat pork and I don't drink alcohol.
Yeah.
So you can call me what you want. If somebody gets me into doing some of the things that I do that I know are better for me, I don't like lying.
Mm-hmm.
Like doing anything wrong. But I appreciate the things that I know are wrong, that I try not to do, and that I encourage other people to do.
Ashe.
I said the other day on Facebook, Oshi, I have five sons and four daughters. All of my sons identify as Muslim to varying degrees. But if I could do any, I would trade my four sons. I hope there's no ill in my statement. If I could trade my four sons for my five daughters being Muslim, I would do it yesterday because I know the value of women. I don't care what society you are. I don't care that Donald Trump doesn't value his wife.
Right.
Or his, or whatever. I know if you are going to pick yourself off the ground, you better pick your woman up first.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't, you're going to be perilled. I'm not saying you have to. You know, there's some, that Prophet Muhammad made a statement, Oshie. He said, whoever gives the reign of leadership over to women, they'll fail. Now, that was 1,400 years ago. I cannot tell a woman who has a bachelor's degree, a law degree, has practiced law, as a district attorney, attorney general, senator, vice president, I can't tell her, no, I don't think it'd be a good idea for you to be president. I'm not qualified to tell her that.
And she was immensely qualified to be president.
Way more than this dude.
Way more than that dude. Way more.
Way more. He is nobody, no two things nobody publicly has ever seen. Is his tax return, you would have to produce if the IRS was knocking on your door, or his transcripts from college.
Schools, you know?
Or, let me add another one, or the FBI, or the same report that keeps us from looking at the files from when Dr. King and John F. Kennedy and Malcolm and Mark assassinated. We can't look at the file of Jeffrey Epstein that would show what his relationship with this guy was.
Well, something just came out on that. Something just came out.
This is within the past.
Yep.
So let us first recognize we wasn't in the wrong fight. We just didn't win.
Yeah.
And sometimes you don't win. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we had won, if winning was really truly winning, then I'm not going to say there wouldn't be a Caucasian or European on the continent of South Africa, but the Africans would be in a way different position.
Much better position. Yeah.
Way, way more, given who they are, the history, our history, and what they have, we should be at the top of the world. And we were at one time. But we got into a fight, and we lost very, very bad. We lost very badly. And it's international, and you can't walk around and like we walk around and not acknowledge the reality of really what we up against. Most of the time, I believe I recognize the collective amnesia. Who want to walk around thinking about our plight all the time?
Yeah.
It would be like the book. I don't know if you've ever read the book or anybody heard about the book, The Alchemist. Mm-hmm. Have you ever read The Alchemist?
No. I've heard of it.
There's a part in it. My daughter Aziza recommended that I read it. So I was in Arizona at the time, and I read it. And one takeaway I got was this is a similar narrative in the Quran with a man named Khidr and Moses. But in this case, it's this young man, when he's traveling with this man who is knowledgeable, and he wants the man to tell him how and when he's going to die. And he said, it's a mercy. I'm paraphrasing. He said, it's a mercy that we don't have to walk. Can you imagine how burdensome it would be walking around with a picture of your impending death by fire, airplane crash, automobile, shot, stabbed? Nobody would want to walk around with that picture all the time.
No. Mm-mm.
And so we have to learn how to walk.
Because you'd be walking
we
in
got
fear.
The picture.
Because you'd be walking
in. We got the picture, but you can't, it's like you have to do it like you're driving a car. You can't drive your car with your just looking in your rearview mirror.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to run into something.
Yep. Got to look ahead.
Got to look ahead. Got to look behind you. Look to your right, to your left, and then keep your eye. What is it?
Head on a swivel.
Keep your eye on the prize.
Yep. You got to keep your head on a swivel. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So here we are, my brother.
Yeah.
Here we are. I don't feel, you know, I don't feel like I felt when my, you know, the morning after my mother passed.
Oh, yeah.
My brother.
Yeah, right.
It's not that serious with me. Like I said, I'm just as broke.
Yeah, man.
If Congress had won, I wasn't looking for nothing to be in the mailbox today or any day.
That's right.
She was applying for a job, you know. I've been turned down from a lot of jobs. I'm blessed to have had a lot of experience, but I know what it's like to be told, "No, we don't want you here." Okay,
mm-hmm.
I'm not getting ready to go hang myself. So we have to figure out how to keep it moving.
Well, the fact of the matter is, it doesn't make any difference for us, for those of us who are conscious. Now, there are some of us who are, I mean, they're emotional about what happened because number one, Trump was so terrible, so bad. How he addressed people, the stuff that he said, the venom that spewed out of his mouth, you know? I mean, he's vile. He was the worst human being to ever be a president. He had no compassion. He was an evil son of a bitch. You know, I don't want to get too descriptive, but...
the man within the past week was so terrified at the prospect of him not being successful as he turned out to be. The man simulated something that... do you remember the time when Richard Pryor could joke about oral sex?
Yeah.
You know, that's just a classic Richard. No, it's bad for your teeth. It's better to give than say. I apologize to everybody out there.
It's better to give than receive.
talking about, but the man simulated oral sex.
Right.
In front of a crowd and it went around the world.
Yeah.
So that's the individual that you have elected president of the United States.
He's crash. He's terrible, man. He's a demagogue. He is a demagogue. And if listeners, if you want to know what a demagogue is, this is what a demagogue is, okay? A demagogue, a person, especially an orator or political leader, who gains power and popularity by arousing the emotions, passions, and prejudice of the people.
Ooh.
Okay? That's a demagogue. To treat or manipulate political issues in a manner of a demagogue, obscure and distort emotionalism and prejudice and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's who he is.
Yeah,
he's a demagogue.
Yeah, but then you talk about an individual, you know, sometimes you have an individual like this, and he's that individual now. Well, they're like that, but they can't really talk out loud about it. You know, if you think of the tyrants, some of them are outspoken. Some of them are like still water, like Putin.
Mm-hmm.
Putin is a quiet, a quiet demagogue, a quiet tyrant.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've ever, I think we've talked about it, Ocean, but the movie, one of my favorite films is a film called The Good Shepherd.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a scene in it where Matt Damon and Angelina Jolie's son, Matt Damon plays the role, it's based on some very true history. The Bay of Pigs is in there, the beginning of the CIA, you know, being able to see how spies actually operate, moles. And so their son wants to follow his father to be a CIA agent. And he's trying to tell him. He tried to warn him, no, don't go into Skull and Bones. No, don't go into the CIA. You don't want this life. He wanted it anyway. He ends up becoming a CIA agent, a junior or whatever, and he's stationed in Africa. And he falls in love with this African woman who is, you know, during this period of time, the communist Hardy, the twin brother of capitalism, mm-hmm. was involved in Africa.
Right, big time.
And they were mm-hmm. putting up leaders. So in the yep. He gets ready to marry this sister, and she's taking the plane to see him, and African man, big African man. He was so tall it didn't look like he could stand all the way up in this plane. He just goes to her seat. They open up the door. He grabs her and he throws her out the plane. It is a chilling scene. It's a good, that's an excellent film. It'll tell you, if you want to see a film, one thing about America, they'll tell on.
That's right. That's one thing about America, man. they'll tell you what they're going to do. They'll tell you.
Oh, see, remember when the guy, I can't think of his name, but he was very involved in Africa. Prigozhin, I think his name was. And he messed around and bucked up at Putin. All Putin did was wait until he got on an airplane.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You ain't heard nobody mention that man's name since. So that's a loud tyrant demagogue. I mean, a quiet tyrant demagogue.
Mm-hmm.
I've never heard seen a reporter ask Putin, "What happened to Prigozhin?"
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
one of my sons like to say, mm-hmm. "What's understood don't have to be explained." So you yeah. know who you're dealing with this cat. Mm-hmm. We dealing with a loud tyrant demagogue,
mm-hmm.
but. You know, hopefully, we have to just keep on soldiering on.
And that's what has to see. It didn't make any difference for those of us who have a level of conscience and understanding of who we are as a people that we're not. You know, we're not Americans. Okay. We're Africans. We're not Americans, and as a consequence, we suffer because of that. But our lack of understanding about that. And how we're constantly belittled and marginalized and relegated to subservient positions. My friend, she said, we're going to get them black jobs because once he does this mass deportation, we're going to have yeah. black jobs again. We're going to be sweeping the streets. We'll be just like in the 1930s and 40s. We have black jobs. You know, we'll be doing landscaping and shit. We'll be in the hotels making beds, you know. Yeah.
It might be, so, you know, Oshie, you know, I have a favorite saying that, you know, you and Mark Wade, you know, not too many other people that when they ask me how I'm doing,
mm-hmm.
I stole this phrase from a friend of mine. He passed away. He was one of the commanders. He was an ex-paratrooper,
mm-hmm.
Green Beret.
Mm.
His name was Hank Walters.
Oh, yeah, I know Big Hank. Big
yeah,
Hank.
He was a member. He was, yeah. He
Commandos.
Was a member of the Commando.
The Commando, yes.
Yeah. And with Father Groppi and mm-hmm. March, the open housing marches.
Yep. Yep.
He was one of the toughest guys, man, I ever met. He was yeah. something else. And I met him when I was about 18. And he used to have a saying, you know, they would add, it'd be, you know, big guy.
Yeah.
Everything, yep. big cars, big homes, big furniture, everything he did. And yeah. they would ask him, how's he doing? And he would say, it's tough for the peon.
Yeah.
And so kind of being the autodidactic wordsmith that I am, I said it for some years, you know, copying off, it's tough for the peon, Goshi.
Mm-hmm.
But I yep. looked it up, and here's what I learned. I became aware of a system in the United States of America post-slavery called the peonage system.
The peonage system, yes.
The convict yep. leasing system.
Yep.
The chain game.
Slavery by another name.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and what it was, and if there's a document, I have the book and the documentary, Slavery yep. by Another Name, and in it, there's a dramatization. Of course, nobody has this, you know, this particular thing on film, but this brother is trying to be independent in Georgia or Alabama, and his mother gets sick. And so one is in Georgia, one is in Alabama. And so he takes a break from, he got a little farm and a little bit of land. and he goes, he's on his way walking to see his mother. Now, he's aware of the peonage system in the South, so he's walking along railroad tracks trying to, and all of a sudden you see this sheriff, you step up onto the track, where are you going, boy? He ends up getting arrested and sentenced 30
right.
days for vagrancy.
Right.
So what would happen then in the South, the individuals who owned the coal mines in the South, that the real rich cats in Pennsylvania, they would come to the jails in the South and they would lease these inmates.
That's right.
And so county or city, wherever the jail was, would be getting this revenue, and these individuals would be put in chains and put in jail and then put in chains and put out to do work, railroads, coal mines. And they would be dying. They have their graves in the South that they probably haven't discovered yet in Mississippi, Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And these individuals, they some of their mothers, sisters is writing the president like, my brother is being held, and he, every time it's time for him to get out, they
that's right. They say that he owed, because he got some stuff from the commissary, and he owed this and that and the other, and some of them cats who just was walking down the road were put into that situation for years.
Yes, boys, some of them young boys, and so right now we I said this the other day, leading up to, okay, you want to talk about slavery? Who is the largest slaveholder in the world today? Not some Arabs over in the Gulf. Shit, they making money. They may have some servants and some people that come from Africa, India, because they need some money. But the largest slaveholder in the world today is the United States penal system, the carceral state. The number of individuals that are incarcerated, locked up in correctional facilities in the United States is the highest of any place in the world.
Exactly.
And so some of the things that we dealing with are in plain sight. So if this comes to being, I don't know. I don't know if the corporate food industry is going to let this dude mass deport all these people. But if he does, then yeah, then you are probably going to have a situation where if they need strawberries and pears and grapes and all the stuff that I eat organic, we ain't picking this food.
No.
We're going to the store.
Right.
Most of the people picking this food, including cannabis in California, don't speak English.
Yep.
And if you put those people out, those industries are going to still need to remain viable. Mm-hmm. And so they may rely on, if you receive public benefits, just like when they reform welfare, you may have to go and work on one of those places. But before you do that now, so I tell people, I saw it the other day, I think I sent it to you, there's a documentary on my anthropologist instructor showed it to us around 2006 or 7 when I was in Madison. It's called Displaced in the New South.
Displaced in
and
the New South.
And what it does,
okay,
it shows the immigrant wave coming into Atlanta, into Georgia, and replacing African Americans in the poultry industry, the meat industry, the farm industry. These individuals are coming in, and these young men, then they go to the neighborhood, the hood. These young men that used to be, might have worked these kind of jobs, is standing around selling crack or whatever the case.
Mm-hmm.
So that reality is still here. But if this man implements some of the things that's going to be their fodder for driving industry, is you broke the law, so now you got to work your way out of it.
You got to pay. You got to pay with your labor. Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're going to be black jobs. We all laughed and joked about black jobs. Our black job was to vote. And apparently, we didn't do that enough, I guess. Well, I wasn't going to vote. So you can be mad at me if you
remember,
want to.
I remember, my great-grandfather and my grandmother. And my mother, for a time after she finished eighth grade in Missouri, was sharecroppers.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a system of poverty that you could not get out of.
Mm-hmm.
You had to escape. And, you know, it was the second thing in the history of us. You know, I always like to reference movies because sometimes it's easier for people to get history and knowledge and truth in that form as opposed to opening up a book. I have more books in my house than I have furniture.
That's so right. I can attest to that.
They're
all over. It's like when I visited when I was in L.A., visiting Renoko Rashidi, and man, this cat had books everywhere, man.
Yeah. I'm still in my mind trying to figure out, okay, what am I going to do with these books before I leave here if I have time, God willing. But in the movie Glory, you got a chance to see these brothers who had escaped the slavery and come north. And were in the part of the Union Army, but they couldn't fight. And then they let them fight. And then they just started pouring out of these plantations, coming, and that's how they won the war. And we just had, you know, the Civil War that ended yesterday, and this time we lost.
Mm-hmm.
But the other one was this happened was the pouring out of the South. I'm in North for the Great Migration.
Yep.
As Isabel Wilkerson said in her book, "The Warmth of Other Suns." We weren't afraid of the sun. We knew where our pigment came from, but we wanted the warmth of a different sun, and it was a different challenge. There's some analysis, but not it doesn't filter down as much or enough to me as the analysis of what happened to us. Those of us who made the migration north to cities, and what happened to our development once we got to living in the city, where as Mrs. Artie Halyard,
that's right,
she said to me when we were both working for the NAACP, you and I, she said some of us Mohammed thought that living in the city meant you work Monday through Friday, you get drunk on Friday and Saturday, go to church on Sunday, and then
be back to work
on
Monday.
And over time, with alcohol and drugs mixed in up with that, like, you know, the bowl of the jar gets shaken up, like, you know, Caucasian, you know, Confederates, states' rights, they're all over the country now. So us coming up here, that got shaken up with the experience, and it destroyed a lot of us. It's still destroying a lot of us.
Sure it is.
You know, I sent you a copy. I don't know if you had a chance to look at it, but it's called The Godfather of Fentanyl. And it gives the history of fentanyl, and the guy who is the godfather is from right here in the metropolitan Milwaukee. Waukesha. He was dealing with fentanyl back in the 70s. I thought fentanyl was a new thing.
Yeah.
But it's been around for 50 years. And it's killing our people, young people. I know young people that have died, several young people from fentanyl overdose. The sister who, Bernice Edwards' son, Justice, you know, who lost his mother. She passed when she was in federal prison. And Gerald Jones and his family and the Todd's family and some other people in the community raised him. And he went to New York, graduated from high school with his sister, went out to L.A. with his brother, 18 years old, died of a fentanyl poison.
Mm-hmm.
So this stuff is on us. We just, you know, crack is still here, Oshie. Crack ain't went nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, if you go past the high rise project, senior projects in Milwaukee, it's like New Jack City with old people. Mm-hmm. These old people are smoking crack in these senior buildings in Milwaukee and probably other places. We still got issues that we don't stop talking about, but they ain't going nowhere. They're here. And trying to wake us up or get us to a place to respond to the things that are going on immediately affect us.
Yeah. Well, you know, Brother Muhammad, you know, when somebody who you feel is going to be elected, even though the person they ran against was a better person, and that's the person you really wanted to be elected, but that asshole was elected, you know, but it's still, you got to do what you got to do, you know? It doesn't change, you know. Yeah, you thought that with the other person being elected, there may be some more opportunities. There may be some more abilities for you to get more education, to better job and so forth. But now this other person, and to believe me, Donald Trump is who he is. You know, and this second term, considering that he has the Senate, he has the Congress, he has the executive branch, this man is going to wreak havoc.
The three branches they control, the legislative, the executive, and the judicial.
Exactly. They got it covered.
They have the majority of Supreme Court, the Congress and the House, Congress and the Senate, and many of the governorships around the country.
Yes. So I remember Reagan and I'm making this comparison because there have been other presidents who we said, well, that'll bring us together. You know, that'll make us, you know, band together and do for ourselves, you know. But it didn't. And unfortunately, this won't either. I'm optimistic, you know, but no.
What we would have gotten, Oshie, if the alternative occurred, to a great degree, that won't happen now, or if it happens, it's going to have to happen at a much different pace. We would have got some rest. We got some rest from chaos. Not just chaos. I mean, you ain't going to never eliminate all the chaos.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's an outcome of everything we do that is not pretty and pleasant. We eat food. But you know, if you eat food, you're going to have to give it back. And when you give it back, it ain't going to, I hope this is not too heavy a graphic early in the morning for people, but you got to give that back. And when you give it back, it's in a different form.
That's right.
Than, you know, what you took it in.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what made me paint that analogy, but clearly when you do certain things, there's going to be an outcome.
Right.
And the outcome isn't always as planned, as pleasant as you would have liked for it to be, but I'm a lot less pessimistic in the sense that I know there are some people who did not vote, who think voting doesn't mean anything. And the last thing I said to everybody who could hear or read last night before I shut everything down, I didn't know the outcome, Yoshi, until you called me this morning.
Is that
I
right?
Still had turned on.
Yeah.
I could just tell from your voice what I was like. Well, she lost.
Yep. And another surprising thing. In fact, when I woke up, I said, "He stole this election. He found a way to steal it because everything he was doing in the campaign was just crazy. He was doing some real stupid shit, saying some real ignorant stuff, you know. But then yet." He won in a landslide. Hey, hold on. Muhammad. He won the popular vote. A Republican hasn't won the popular vote.
He had never done it before.
No. And Republicans hardly ever do it. Only done one time in 30 years. No.
Yeah.
That's why the Electoral College is for shit. But even at that, he won the popular vote by, I think, 3 or 4 million. You know, But I'm saying, listen, I'm gonna take a break. So when we come back from the break, the number of people out there in the queue to weigh in on this subject, on the, you know. So I'm gonna do that. And so when we come back, my good brother Muhammad Abdullah is my guest, and we're talking about the next day. In fact, we got a George Duke song, "The Morning After."
Yeah.
So we'll play that.
Apropos.
Very apropos. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And that was George Duke, The Morning After. That's what it is. It's morning in America. Yeah. It seems like it's going to the same thing. It's the same thing. Okay. Let me, my dear friend, she sent me this. It's a post from Sister Venus Williams. She said, "You are awakening to the same country you fell asleep to last night. The very same country. Put yourself together. And when you see me, do not ask me, what do we do now? How do we get through the next 4 years? Some of our ancestors dealt with at least 400 years of this madness under worse conditions. So continue to do the work, the good work. Continue to build bridges, not walls. Continue to lead with compassion. Continue the demanding work of liberation. Continue to do the demanding work of liberation for our people. Continue to dismantle broken systems, large and small. Continue to set the best example for the children. Continue to be a vessel of nourishing joy. Continue right where you are, right where you live, unto your days. Do so in the name of the Creator, who expects nothing less from each of us. And if you're not continuing, above all in the community, partnerships, collaborations, what is it you have been doing? What is it you are waiting for?" Yeah, I say, what are you waiting for? Yeah, Sister Vanessa Williams. Okay, my brother, Brother Niam, I'm here with Brother Muhammad Abdullah. Yeah, we're talking about the morning after, the next day. Let me get some folks in here. You know what to do, family, if you want to jump in. There's a number of you already in the queue. Hit star twice, and you'll be in. I know. Good afternoon, Brother Irv. How you doing? Or good morning to you. Good morning, brother.
Brother OG, thank you for taking my call. Brother Muhammad, thank you for being on the show, because you have given a lot of insight. I don't know whether you know it or not, brother, but you say some very profound things. And it doesn't seem like, it seems effortless when you say it. And your analogies are right on point. But brother, something happened to me yesterday. And when I woke up and found out.
Thank you, brother.
Oh, no problem. But something I had to be honest about with myself is I was running around here saying, oh, Kamala's going to win. She's going to be the first black woman president. And I'm not really a Democrat or a Republican. I don't even participate in this foolishness. But I was under the impression, and this is what has been indoctrinated in my mind, that white people are inherently good. See, in my mind, I thought that there were enough white people that had common sense, not necessarily intelligence, that they would not follow behind foolishness. Because I give white people that type of whatever it is that you give them. But if you look at their history, brother, they have never even proven to you anything other than they're militaristic, they're violent, and they're heathens, they're rapists. But me, not speaking for anybody else, I still said, no, there's some good white folks out here. These white folks ain't that crazy. They're not going to follow some captain texting somebody 3 o'clock in the morning and he's president of the United States, or somebody that drinks bleach or said that the sickness was a hoax. They're not going to follow him. And if all the black people in the United States voted for Kamala, she still wouldn't be president. So let's stop acting as if we are going to move something in this country. We are still trying to latch in onto these white folks or anybody else to integrate. And the integration is failed. This is the manifestation of us trying to move out of the way into this burning house. White folks' house is always going to be on fire. They live in hypocrisy. Now I'm talking loud, brother, because go ahead.
No, I was just saying you were breaking up on it. So okay, go ahead, brother. Go ahead, Irv.
People live in a constant state of hypocrisy. They live in a lie. From Santa Claus to the Easter Bunny to the blue-eyed Jesus with the straight hair. They live in hypocrisy. So they're in a comfortable place. But see, for an African, I can't live in nothing but truth. I have to live in truth. I have to see things for what they are and act accordingly. Even when you look at the different religions, they all are somewhat similar. But when you look at a Muslim religion, it is a practical religion. Does that make any sense? It's practical. It's something. They're not telling you to look in the sky and you're going to get yours on the other side and all that foolishness. So I just wanted to make that point that I believe that these white folks were good, and everything they do is totally that they're not. And what we as a people have to do, I believe, is to let this be similar to the Jim Crow or the Black Codes. Let us come together, do for self and kind, and move and go where we need to go, and stop blessing our wagons going to everybody else.
I say,
brother, thank you for letting me speak.
Right on, brother. Well, you know, a good sister said it best. She said, if you see somebody and they show you who they are, you know, you should believe them the first time. Yeah, go ahead, Muhammad.
So with respect to Brother Irv, we know we have been challenged in terms of trusting the other side for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And some of us work in that realm, and it works for them. It has never fully worked for me, except maybe in the employment capacity. And usually something goes awry. I always think about Jack Johnson, you know, because we all know, we've observed brothers who that's their life passion. You know, mm-hmm. The poster child for that to me is Kanye West. I don't care how much money he makes, he don't want nothing but that kind of woman by his side.
Mm.
That's him.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they asked Jack Johnson, who had plenty of his share of that back when it could get you lynched, why are these white women so attracted to you? And Jack Johnson said, because we eat cold eels and think distant thoughts. So what he was trying to point out is the ridiculousness of the man's question, because I don't know, I've never had that kind of attraction to a Caucasian woman or Caucasian people.
Right, me
either. You know, I didn't place myself geographically in the places that I was brought or have been in much of my life. But I really like, in the realm of what Brother Irv was saying, Wynton Marcellus' statement with respect to dealing with Caucasian people in terms of not losing your perspective. And he said, well, race in this country is the thing in the story, in the mythology, that you have to do for the kingdom to be well. It's always something that you don't want to do. It's always that thing which is about you confronting yourself, and it's tailor-made for you to fail dealing with it.
Mm.
He said, but the question of your heroism and your courage and your success in dealing with this trial is, can you confront it with honesty? And do you confront it, and do you have the energy to sustain an attack on it? He said, and since in this case jazz music is at the center of the American mythology, it necessarily deals with race. Mm-hmm. The more we run from it, the more we run into it. It's an age-old story. If it's not race, it's something else. But in this particular country, in this instant and in this nation, it is race. And so we cannot escape it.
Right.
I don't care if you, I've noticed that one of the most iconic scenes to me in the movie, I hope I don't sound like Donald John Trump, but in the movie Hannibal Lecter, the rich one, if you remember, he escaped. And where does he go?
Right. He goes to where? Panama?
He goes to Africa, and he's dressed in an all-white suit, hat, white safari outfit, and he gets up, and around all the sea of African people, he says, I'm free, white, and 21. I can do whatever I want to do. So I'm saying, we took us down that path to say, hey, we can't be too pessimistic because we have young people coming behind us. And we have to give them a message that makes them think that the answer to this is for me to kill myself if I don't get what I want right now. And I always think about there are people, no matter what situation you find yourself in, somebody behind you, you can call them your lineage, your ancestors, somebody prepared a way for you to be here. The country Saudi Arabia before 1932 was just a backwater. But boy, Muhammad Ibn Saud, he had a vision.
Look at it today.
You look at the tallest building in the world. You can stand inside the Haram in Mecca in front of the Kaaba and look over the Kaaba and see the tallest building in the world. That's something. But Prophet Muhammad said, one of the signs of the last day, he said, you will see barefoot shepherd boys. And this was 1,400 years ago. You will see barefoot shepherd boys competing for the building of tall buildings.
Yeah. Well, you know, I had quoted Maya Angelou that when somebody shows you who they are, the first time, believe them. And
yes,
Trump
sir.
Has done that consistently.
Yes,
let me get Brother Paul in here. I haven't heard from Brother Paul in a while. Good morning.
Is that our brother from across the water?
Yep, that's our brother from the
across the pond.
I
really want to hear what he thinks about what happened yesterday.
Brother Paul, how you
doing?
Yeah, Brother Paul, how you doing?
Oh man, I'm so pleased to hear your voice, Bubba.
You too,
OG.
Man. I really am. But I haven't heard your voice in a few weeks, man. So yeah, I really
Bubba
am.
I hope you had a really good rest, and I hope you had time to recuperate and pull yourself together. I hope you've done some thinking, and you know.
Yes.
I'm just so pleased that you're back on the station and doing what you're supposed to be doing. And, you know, thank the ancestors for just putting that umbrella over you and just protecting you, man. It's a beautiful thing.
Thank you, my brother. I appreciate that. Thank you. Yeah.
Yes. You know, thanks for the kind words of your guest. And it's nice to hear that.
Oh, yeah. That's Brother Muhammad. Yeah.
Yes, Brother Muhammad. You know, it's... It's good. Glad that you're back, and I know you're a good friend of Baba Ochi, so you must be a great person.
Oh man, for a long time, brother. for a long time, back in the day, yes, sir.
I gathered that, and that's you judge a person by their peers, and you know, you all sound great.
Despite some small differences, we have more love and in common than we have differences.
That's for sure. That's for sure.
No, that's a good thing. You know, there's nothing really wrong. You know, the truth of the matter is, if you put your finger up, they're not all the same size, and they're different for a reason. There's differences for a reason. You know, being different is not a problem. Really, the problem is when you're ignorant. That's the problem. Mm-hmm. You understand?
Yes,
but you know. What can I say? Here we are in Donald Hitler, Mussolini, Trump, the dump territory. And what's changed? Well, you know, Baba, everything has to change. I said this a million times, and I'll keep saying it because it's the truth. Nothing stays the same. The only thing we think stays the same is when our mindset doesn't change. we fall for the hocus pocus and indoctrination in fairy tales, which keep us in a constant state of perpetual repetition, rhetorical, repeating ourselves, spreading lies and trying to make it the truth, then we don't see the change. But, you know, we don't come out our mothers and stay as babies. Nature forces change on you. Everything in nature changes. There's nothing in the known universe, Baba Ochi. Nothing. Absolutely nothing in the known universe and the unknown universe that doesn't change. We're on a piece of rock which is traveling at about 1,500 kilometers per second. Did you hear what I just said to you?
Yeah, yeah.
1,500 kilometers per second. If you want to measure that with a jumbo jet, a jumbo jet travels between 300 and 500
right.
kilometers per second. Okay? So we're and not only are we traveling round spinning, we're traveling around the sun.
Mm-hmm.
At miraculous speed. And not only are we traveling around the sun's also traveling. And the whole solar system is traveling through space. We're traveling, we're moving. So how can we be the same? Nothing can stay the same. If you get in a car, you're not at the same spot. You're changing. So when, you know, the point I'm trying to make is we have to adapt to change.
Yeah.
And that's where the problem lies. Most of us don't want to adapt to change.
Mm-hmm.
Look, this is not to offend anybody. We have to adapt to change. Yeah, we have our story, not his story. We have our story. And most of us, Baba Ochi, I have to speak the whole truth and nothing but the truth. Most of us are negating our story. Do you not think that's a problem?
Oh, yes, most definitely. A lot of us don't want to hear.
If you
don't want to hear. That's all. So I don't want to hear that, you know.
All right. Look, I have to speak the truth. And if it's not someone else's truth, well, then we're going to have to meet somewhere. But the truth of the matter is, right, we spend time talking other people's stories. Most of us don't even know our story. Popping up, sometimes it's not even our story, just fantasies, okay? That's a big problem. Big, big, big problem. Because if you don't know your story, then how can you claim to know yourself? How is that possible? How? That's where the problem lies. Yeah. If I'm telling you about my oppressor's story, and I'm telling you about my oppressor's story like it's truth, then is my oppressor got the problem, or have I got the problem? Mm-hmm. I'll ask you that question, Baba Ochi. Is the oppressor the one with the problem, or have I got the problem?
Well, you got the problem.
I've got the problem. I've got the problem.
Yeah.
He ain't got the problem, because I keep regurgitating his story. Mm-hmm. But I'm not really telling my story. So I got the problem. Mm-hmm. You see where we're standing. So we're there following the politics, waiting for Donald, Hitler, Mussolini, Trump to dump, see what he's going to do down the line.
Mm-hmm.
And some people say, well, if we'd have got Camilla Holocaust Harris, we might have got more killing in Palestine and more murder, more corruption, more Decepticon behavior. Mm-hmm. Deceiving the people with the lying tongue and all the rest of it, because that's what they do. But Baba Ochi, please, I just want you to tell me where I'm going wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. Am I wrong there?
No, not at all, brother, no.
But from an elder like yourself, I really take that to heart because it means something. If I'm not wrong, what the hell are we doing? That's what the question I keep asking myself. You know, buying into this circus, this political circus, buying into these ideologies which are not our own. They're not our story, but we buy into it like it's theirs,
mm-hmm.
Like it's ours. The European story, the Arab story, and all the rest of it. We buy into it like it's ours, and we constantly regurgitate. We tell people this is who we are. We're the Arabs, we're the Europeans with their ideologies. But we never tell them about our African self. Why? Why is that? What are we so frightened of?
Because we've been made to feel ashamed of it. We've been made to feel ashamed of who we are. And every entity on this planet have tried to make us out into what they wanted us to be. And unfortunately, because we have been removed from it, we've had a hard time. We had a hard time being who we are and standing on that and feeling proud and dignified and feeling strong standing on that. Everything that has happened to us was intended to break us down. And
it's still happening.
Yes.
It's still happening. I come to a conclusion in the last week, yeah, and I haven't got all the facts, and I think I'm right on this. Mm-hmm. I realized something. I've been trying to say something. Sometimes you have an idea in it, you come to a kind of conclusion. You don't know if you're 100% right, but you listen to the commentators that you know talk sense. I'm not talking about the commentators who speak hocus pocus and fairy tales, or they just regurgitate things for whatever agenda they're trying to swing out. I'm not talking about those ones. I'm talking about the ones like these platforms, like the people you can say, and even some of these white people. I mean, to the truth, some of these white people do talk sense. I have to be honest. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But what I've realized is this, yeah. This England, this country where I am born in, and I have to speak it because we're speaking English. I do wonder why anybody would speak English. But I do know it's because these people oppressed them. They had a system where they imposed upon them, mm-hmm. and part of their warfare structure was to impose their language on them. So anybody who speaks English is under that captivity. But what I'm saying is this. I realized in the last few weeks that this English empire is consistent. I realized, it just came to me. I know this, that it's Sir Francis Bacon. I know his name. He was the chancellor in this country. Sir Francis Bacon. Sir Francis Bacon, who created the character Shakespeare, who these people tell you wrote the Bible. Shakespeare didn't write no Bible because he didn't exist, just like Jesus Christ didn't exist and all these other hocus pocus people did not exist. Shakespeare did not exist.
Let me say this. Hold on. Let me say this, Brother Paul. I've said that.
Yes.
England has made up more people, more situations, William Tell, King Arthur, and so forth. They have no damn history. No real factual history. They make this shit up.
Right.
Shakespeare was not real. Even though you have a picture of him, he's not real.
Right. The reason why I'm saying this, because I realized having the ability to come to America, I've got family in America and Jamaica, having that and observing people, listening to people, black, white and indifferent, listening to them, came to the conclusion that the English empire is still alive and kicking.
Yes.
There's no, because I keep hearing about this American empire. I keep hearing about the American empire. But you know what? I go back over my thoughts and things I've learned in the past. And then I remember the bloodlines. I don't hear people talking about the bloodlines like Clinton. You know who Clinton is directly linked with? Bush. You know who these people are directly linked with by blood? First and second cousins to this monistic family we got here. Mm-hmm. This monistic family that came out of Germany from Rome. Okay? People just need to... You see, the thing is, the people are not reading nothing. They're not looking far enough back and to see how these people are connected. It's the same thing going on. Right there in America, you got the Senate. Where did the Senate come from? Didn't that not come out of Rome?
Yeah.
Am I talking rubbish?
Right.
The Senate.
So,
go ahead, Brother Muhammad.
So some of what I just heard Brother Paul say, I didn't know as a kid growing up. I learned this when I became incarcerated when I was 17, 18 years old. I was kicked out of high school. I started to read Malcolm's autobiography. So I've been reading this for years. So when you talk about history, as a person, as a single person human being connected to a family, I have never seen laid knowing eyes on my father.
Wow.
Ever. Mm-hmm. Know nothing about his siblings, his parents, nothing. It's a blank slate. This is part of the legacy in my family. My mother can say the same thing up to a point. I remember, and I don't quote him often, but when I was in the so-called Nation of Islam, when I was in my early 20s, Louis Farrakhan was the national spokesman after Malcolm was assassinated and he took his position in New York. He was interviewed on this program called Soul, and this brother named Alex Hayslip asked him a question. He asked him two questions that I thought were phenomenal. One about homosexuality. You can see it on YouTube. But the other one he asked about was why young African-American men, women, don't seize the educational opportunity. He said, because they don't, and I can't listen to Louis Farrakhan now for 15 seconds, but this was classic. He said, because they don't see themselves in the math, in the science, in the this, wow, and in that. In order to really excel holistically, you have to see yourself. So everybody finds, hopefully, a narrative that fits them. If you start taking pot shots at it, I don't have anything to control over what you believe, what you consider close to you and close to your heart and whatever the case. I know my African ancestry. I know my history of slavery in this country. I was born in the period of Jim Crow. I grew up in the urban northern cities. And I don't know why I was guided to al-Islam. If you want to think it's an Arab trick, fine. You can think whatever you like. What I know is there are some parts of life and history and science I understand, and the rest I leave alone. What you quoted, brother, eloquently, man, I think is very, very commendable about how fast the earth moves. If you look at that same clip on YouTube of Farrakhan, so he said the same thing. The earth inclines to the plane of its orbit 33 degrees 30 minutes. That's a natural inclination. Homosexuality is not a natural inclination for the black man. Mm-hmm. So that's the truth. I'm gonna hold on to that.
Yeah.
So whatever works for you, work it. But if you want to be invited, I don't celebrate Thanksgiving. But if you keep taking pot shots at me from behind a wall that you think fortifies you, and if I don't get behind it next to you the way you are, standing where you are, I'm out of the game, then we ain't going to never come together. So let's keep the subject on the current, the contemporary, and we can make references to the past if we want to. The fact of the matter is, you know, we're talking about this woman, Pamela Devi Harris, lost an election yesterday. It's disappointing, but we got to move on.
That's right.
And let's try to move on together and keep the focus on the prize and not about what clothes I'm wearing on my back, because I wear what I can afford.
I say.
But people tell me I look good, so I'm all right.
All right, Brother Muhammad. Go ahead, Brother Paul. I'm going to get some more callers in. Go ahead, Brother Paul.
Yeah. If the elder thinks that he's taking pot shots at him, let me be clear.
No, he's not.
Okay.
Yeah.
I hope he doesn't, because for me, I think I'd be straight up. This is not about you, elder. And one thing, you said you don't know your father. And I would suggest, elder, with all due respect, and I see this with in humility, but you just take one look in the mirror and you'll see your father, because I know as fact that you was created by two people and one of them was your father. So take a good look in the mirror and then you'll see him. But other than that,
do you know who your parents are, brother?
Brother, I know.
Do you know who your mother and father is? I've walked with a limp all my life, because I don't know one of my parents. I'm not a cripple, but don't try to deny me what is real. All my life growing up, I walked with a limp. Not physically. I played basketball with my brother Oshi. Now I got game. I'm 75. But not knowing who your father is as important as not knowing your history. I was talking to a sister last week about the documentary. It was my auntie, May, about the documentary, The Central Park Five. And I was telling her about that I have never watched those young boys that Donald Trump tried to help crucify being railroaded by those police, and it brought tears to my eyes. My aunt said, I can't watch stuff like that. I've watched our history of slavery and coming out of Africa. They never took. I thought Roots on TV was milk toast to me.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know my history, and I know who I am, and that's all I can be. So all I can say is, if you know your parents, just imagine taking one of them out of the picture, and half of your life that you lived is gone. Now I'll stand up. I'm a man. I have children, grandchildren, and great grandchildren. They don't see no weak Muhammad Abdullah. I've got warts and flaws, but I know not knowing who your parent is almost paramount, if not knowing your own history. I'm not afraid of my African history, my African past, but I also am not going to mythologize it, and give it some kind of support and importance over. I have a problem with people who don't want to look at what happened to us in the 100 years of Jim Crow in America. Mm-hmm. That's a collective amnesia that I would like to have relief from, but I can't do it for everybody. I've done it for myself, mm-hmm. and I'm not finished looking for my father to direct answer your question. I'm still looking for that history, but can't nobody else take that off the board for me.
I say. All right, brother, Paul, go ahead and make a statement. I'm gonna get
sorry. I held it. I hear that. Baba Ochi, the reality is of this here. I'm not one. I've done a lot of research here, and I have to be honest with myself. But I'm not one, and I'm telling this truthfully, that thinks that we're going to come together under those sort of circumstances. And I don't want to come together with people. I'm telling you that. I've studied this thing. I don't want to. I don't want them practices. I don't want the practices of people who enslaved us, put us in chains, gave us their practices. I don't want that. I'm not one. And I'm a fighter, and I'm willing to fight for that. And whoever comes up against it, I'm willing to do what we have to do. I'm going to tell you the truth. I'm not one of those who wants to hold hands with that. I'm not. I'm not holding hands with anybody or any ideology which has enslaved us, turned us into eunuchs, and done all that. I'm not one, and I don't want that because I know the truth, okay? Mm-hmm. I don't want that. I don't care if you're black, white, indifferent, African-American, English or what. I don't care. I don't want that. That's me because I know the truth, and that's what I'm working with. I'm walking with the sword of truth, not hocus pocus and fairy tales. I'm working with the sword of truth, and that's it.
Right,
and this
brother.
Is the point I've come to, Baba Ochi. This is how I feel now. You see, we often hear about the Chinese. 40 years ago, they were down in the dumps, you know, totally finished. Mm-hmm. They had to wipe out some of their people,
That's
their
right.
own people. You hear what I'm saying?
That's right.
They had to take out those ideologies, take out those who they fought. Right now, they're Muslims in China are locked up in concentration camps. What are these Muslims doing? They're locked up in concentration camps in China because they're not having it anymore. They don't want that. Right now, they watch their brothers and sisters murdered in Palestine. What are they doing about it? Man, listen, don't give me a break. I'm done with that. Done with that. Look, I'm here to tell the truth. Who it offends, so be it.
All right, brother.
We got
Paul.
A big, big fight on our hands, a battle on our hands. That's what I'm saying to you, Baba Ochi. We got a battle on our hands. And that battle is for the minds of our people, the That's African right. mind of the people, and nothing else. I don't That's care right. about anything else anymore.
All right.
I don't care with your ideology, the European ones, the Arab ones. I'm not for that. And if you don't have me on this program playing again because of that, so be it. I'm with the ancestors. When a person says they don't know their ancestors, as an African, you look in the mirror, right? You look in the mirror hard enough, you go into yourself deep enough, and you will find your ancestors and who you are. Okay, you do the necessary research. You may not have it in the physical, but you have it in the spiritual. Not hocus pocus and fairy tale pie in the sky. You have it in the physical. That's our fear. Okay, that's it.
All right, brother Paul.
Right, so that's it.
All right.
Thank you.
Hey, Jay, how you doing? Quickly, man.
Yo, what was just accomplished in these last 30 minutes? What was accomplished?
What do you mean, what was accomplished?
Not a damn thing if you don't want it.
I mean, was anything accomplished for African people when you have a guest on that's trying to educate us? And we just had to deal with 30 minutes of that. Do you think that's fair to the people that's listening to your show, OC?
Listen, brother. Listen, Jay, hold on. Hold on. Let me mute you, man. We having dialogue. That's what was accomplished. People had an opportunity to get their ideology and or their philosophy or their words or what's on their mind out. That's what was accomplished. Okay? All right, Jay?
Yeah, I got you, bro.
All right.
I got you. If that was an accomplishment for African people that are now facing a crisis, then I hear you, brother. But okay. Brother Abdullah, how are you, my brother?
I'm fine, thank you.
Listen, I just want to say this to you. When we as a people deal with struggle, the only thing that you could do is move forward on how we process that struggle and how we fight in that struggle. Because now, with the situation that has just happened, we're going to have to figure out how we as a people are going to move forward and fight what's about to happen. Because the situation, I don't see it getting any better, but it sure could get a lot worse for our people. And unfortunately, I think we don't have anything in place to really deal with what's about to happen. Now, I'm just waiting for us to get to the point where we could now identify who our enemies are, crush our enemies, and move forward for our survival. Now, we were just shown, even though we know it, who our enemies are. And hopefully, we'll accept the fact that they are enemies and deal with them accordingly. Because if we don't, we're going to be wiped out. Because it's not like we're in a situation to whereas we could really protect ourselves, sustain ourselves, and move ourselves forward to sovereignty.
So let me say this, brother. We I mentioned this to Oshi.
Thanks, Jay.
So let me try to get this in right quick. Mm-hmm. So let's take, for example, the situation in Gaza. Now, I've had Muslim brothers, I've had non-Muslim brothers talk about, you know, the genocide in Gaza, and I hate seeing any human being suffer. But what I was telling Oshi the other day, back in 2006 when Hezbollah fired some missiles into Israel and Israel laid Lebanon flat. And during that period of time, I was in Dearborn, Michigan, and we were taking the class that I was in to a Shiite mosque. And I asked this lady who was leading the discussion, Shiite lady from Lebanon, she lived in Dearborn, Michigan. I said, "Have you ever heard of Richard Pryor?" She said, "You mean the comedian?" I said, "Yeah." I was surprised she knew who Richard Pryor was, but she's in Detroit. So I said, "Richard Pryor asked one time, what were the Japanese thinking about when they bombed Pearl Harbor?" He said, "They may have been seeing, you know, people out in California laying back on the beach, the Beach Boys." He said, "But they got some white people in Mississippi and Alabama they keep down in the basement on chains just for when somebody get ready to do something like this." So what was Hezbollah? What was Hamas thinking? You don't know who the Israel is and Benjamin Netanyahu? Now, let's back the train up here. In most of the communities across America, the indigenous African-American communities, they are Palestinian Arabs. Because part of the thing, when you say the word Arab, very seldom is it distinguished, kind of like when people say Hispanic Latino. But most of the businesses that are owned in African-American communities across America are owned by Palestinian Arabs, cell phone stores, grocery stores, furniture stores. We have no relationship or alliance with these people. And they've been in the United States about 50-something years.
Mm-hmm.
And they've made money off our community. They have built huge masters off our community. And we have no alliance with them. Now, maybe some people don't want to have one. But if you want support when your people are getting wiped out someplace, how come you ain't never thought about, instead of just looking at us as commodities, trying to come together with us. So I wanted to get that out there because there was some discussion about Gaza. We didn't get to it. But as a Muslim, I want to have a discussion about how you behave over here in my community before I become overly concerned about what's going on with your brothers and sisters and uncles and cousins and grandfathers over in Gaza, West Bank, and whatnot, because that's part of the world. These people are here. Hopefully we'll build some alliances, because I did hear that word. And in order to get us up, we're not going to be able to win our struggle. Just like Oshie said, if all the, maybe it was Irv, all the African-American people in America had voted for Kamala Harris or Barack Obama, that wouldn't have gotten them in the office.
So hey, brother Muhammad, some
alliances somewhere along the way.
Mm-hmm. Quickly, Jay.
Brother Muhammad, let me say this right quick about this Palestinian Arab thing. That don't mean that
no Palestinians ever enslaved nobody.
Yeah, but the reality is, the Palestinian, and we got to be honest about it. When they come into our community, they have no respect for us. They have no respect for our women. They basically use us for their own benefit. Now, a lot of them think that Trump is going to stop the war. I heard a Muslim imam, head leader, or whatever say that we're voting for Trump because he's going to stop the war in Ukraine and he's going to do something about what's going on in Israel. I'm telling
Seriously?
You for let me finish the point, please.
I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about the imam, what the imam says. Seriously?
Yeah. Hey, bro.
Go ahead.
Let me just finish.
Go ahead, Jay,
point.
Please. Go ahead, be quick, Jay.
The point of the matter is, Trump is going to let Israel wipe the Palestinians
right.
off the earth.
You're right.
More than likely.
Yes, you're
okay,
right.
As far as the Ukraine thing go,
he's saying that he's going to be able to stop the war.
Right.
Possibility. Now, the main thing is this, that Americans get caught up and they don't understand the real geopolitics of it. Is he going to get rid of NATO? And is Russia going to go in and invade Poland and other countries? The reality is, listen to what I'm saying. There's no proof that Putin's going to do any of that. There's no proof. That's just warmongering and fear. But I do see him getting rid of NATO. I do see him killing as many Palestinians that Israel can, because remember, Israel just got rid of their defense minister, who was not in accordance with wiping the Palestinians off the face of the earth. So listen, when it's all said and done, what black people gonna do for black people?
Yeah. Well, listen, Jay, I appreciate you, man.
Thank you, brother.
Okay, you bet. Brother Kevin, how you been hanging on, man? How you been?
Hey, I've been doing fine. How about yourself?
I'm well, thank you.
That's good. I know you're short on time. Mm-hmm. Dr. Henry Clark told us you have no friends.
That's right. That's right, Kevin.
We're looking for folks to come and be our allies. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
We got to be allies with one another. Looking outside ourselves is not going to happen. And for these people who don't think that it's possible for us to do this ourselves, they need to stop going to church and saying that if God is with you, it's more than the world against you. That's all I've got to say, brother.
Appreciate that, brother. Thanks a lot, Brother Kevin. All right. Brother Muhammad, you got the last word.
Yes, sir. Well, you know, Oshie, the only thing I will end with this. You know, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, in terms of alliances, I attended this, it was called An Evening with Barbara Love. And her title of her subject was Building Alliances. And I posed the impossible question of to her of me, say, aligning with Louis Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam. And she took me through a process that was very, very profound. I'm not going to say she convinced me. I don't think no one has an exact position on alliances. But at the end of the day, when the brother asked us to look in the mirror, Oshie, I don't know what he looks like, and I don't know what anybody else on this talk format looks like but you. But when we look in the mirror, we ain't Jack Johnson. And we see some ancestors that they from someplace else. So you have to treat intelligently the question that, like it or hate it, we part of humanity. And any problem in terms of where people are being oppressed, and I believe Nelson Mandela, Malcolm, I believe all of these brothers believe this way. Oppression, Dr. King said, anywhere is oppression everywhere. And you have to, we can't do this by ourselves. I don't think we ever did. I don't think nobody topples you without some infiltrators and some insurgents. So taking that into account, I still think the strength is building alliances. And yes, definitely you have to know who you are before you divide yourself amongst anybody else.
I say. All right, my dear friend. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Right on, my brother. We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants. Think they can't do it out, and they sure in hell don't want to pay for it. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep, that means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Abibi Fahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a blessed and wonderful day, and I hope to see you on Friday. Peace, family.
Hey, good show, man. Listen.